Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I'll just say this. Nebraska's playing Minnesota Thursday night. Nebraska by 100. The Cornhusker fans are acting up and acting out. They're going to volleyball games. They're driving bulls around in little cars.
Russ Dellinger.
The Alliance is going to go down in college sports history as one of the most colossal failures and impediments to college football.
And SI's Pat Forte.
It took me a long time to find that out, too, because everybody that was going on and on about this said nothing about the actual competition. And this is my ongoing issue with coverage and or treatment of women's sports.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, week one, race for the case, baby.
Woo!
Woo! Let the bad picks be. Was not a banner year last year, though. I get to 500 at the end?
Ooh. Last year was bad.
It was bad. Yeah. I did win.
It was iffy. You may have gotten there by like a game or two.
I won. Because you guys.
Nobody won, Dan.
I
we
won.
We didn't even crack 500. Nobody won.
I recall
there were no winners.
I recall both of you buying me cocktails in Los Angeles at the National Championship.
That's true. The speakeasy underneath the parking garage in downtown. Yes.
Yes. The cigar, weird cigar bar with no roof.
The rum. It was the rum cigar bar. They made the killer rum old fashions.
Mm. I don't know how that worked on that hurricane came through. But anyway, still not sure where we were. But we were somewhere and you paid. So I look forward to retaining my title. I rarely know where I'm at. Really hard to pick games. We're going to pick them later. We got a few news items here, including Nebraska just going crazy in a 24-hour span.
Holy moly.
But really hard to pick games because of the transfer portal. So, and one thing we did see was, I think it was 5 of the 7 games over last weekend went the under. The under's hot. You got these new rules. So be careful out there with these picks because who the hell knows who's on these teams.
Yeah, 8 to 10 plays. Fewer per team, basically, I think. Right. Right. Or something like that. Yeah.
Right. So that could play a role. Can Vegas catch up to that? That might be your play here. You also have a number of teams that are going to be playing 2-3 quarterbacks. So, you know, they might look good early and then they're playing different guys to try to make sure they don't immediately transfer. That's a whole aspect in gambling. You know, you keep your starter in all the way. Yeah. Maybe you score 60. If you play in that third stringer because you're trying to keep them happy, maybe score 45. That's obviously how you lose a game, or 55 even. So that's where we're at. We have more fun here than pure gambling advice. We'll do our best. We'll try to our endeavor will be to be a little better this year. Although I guess you would have made some money with me. Let's talk a little few news items. Ross, you were at the college football meetings in Dallas, Dallas-Fort Worth Airport on Wednesday, where you were among the ones that tried to chase down George Kalayakoff about what's going on in the Pac-12. What is the news and what was the scene down there? Anybody punch each other out? Any dirty looks? Anything?
Well, obviously we're not allowed inside the meeting, but the highlight of the day was certainly George Kalayakoff briskly moving past reporters in the lobby outside of the conference room where commissioners met. So yeah, there was about 3 of us that we were kind of all in a gaggle around Greg Sankey. And as George kind of skipped on by, we kind of left Sankey and ran to George and kind of chased him up the escalator, hurling questions at him. And he didn't say much, as you'd expect. One of the things he said, I think Heather Dinich of ESPN asked him how were the meetings given realignment, and he said, "Oh, I was just happy to look forward to the future." And then I asked the last question to him before he disappeared up the escalator, and it was, "What's your future?" And he laughed very loudly, and he said, "I'm focused on my league winning a national championship. See you guys." And disappeared. There you go. Flash in the pan. So that was the highlight. You know, there wasn't any significant news in decisions that were made, mostly because realignment, right, is still lingering. It's still like uncertain. You've got the AC, you got, you know, Stanford, Cal, Oregon State, and Washington State that don't really have a home right now. We're not sure what they're going to do at this time at 9 a.m. Central on Thursday. The ACC has not expanded to add Stanford and Cal or SMU. So until that happens, you know, they really can't make big decisions. But the biggest thing I took from conversations publicly and privately with commissioners was there is an alignment in the room, even with SEC and Big Ten commissioners, that if they do have to make a change to the format, which it appears they will, that they'll go a 5+7, 5 automatic qualifiers and 7 at large, that they won't eliminate automatic qualifiers. And I think that was probably expected. But I didn't really know if the Big Ten and SEC were going to like kick in the door to the conference room and say, guys, you know, we want best at large or best 8, you know, at large, and eliminate AQs. That didn't happen. It seems like there's some alignment there. So that was really the most significant news. But there weren't really any big decisions until this realignment settles. They'll meet again in about a month. At that point, they hope realignment is settled so they can get to some alterations with the format and the revenue distribution and all that stuff.
The words you used there, I think, were perfect, Ross. Flash in the pan, the George Kliakoff story. I mean, that's going to be his epitaph. He like, came in and everybody thought, oh, this guy's good because he's not Larry Scott. And now he's, you know, having to outrun reporters out of there, being chased by discussions of the, you know, demise of his conference. So, you know, in the survival of the fittest, he didn't survive. And maybe they will win a national championship this year. They really will actually be good, but I don't know how much long-lasting satisfaction there will be for that if there's no conference. To your other point, real quick, yeah, I'm glad, you know, I mean, look, put nothing past whoever has the juice in college football to squeeze everyone else. And I'm glad that the Big Ten and SEC, at least for now, do not appear willing to squeeze everyone else and just go with a slightly altered format, 5 automatic bids, 7 at large, and not just try to stomp everyone else out of the playoff. So that to me is, if that ends up holding, if that's the way they choose to go, that's good.
Never good when you're a conference commissioner getting perp walked. Did you kill your wife? You know, like that's... that's not been a great tenure. The 30 for 30 on they probably will do one maybe on what happened to the Pac-12. Maybe not. No one will care by then. Look, the mistake they made was trying to get $50 million out of ESPN, completely overreading that market early, and then telling the ESPN just basically going, "This is, you guys are unreasonable. Forget it. We're out." And then everyone else going, "Well, there's nothing left," including Fox saying, "Well, if ESPN's out, we don't need to buy the whole league. We'll just buy the parts we want." And so they bought USC and UCLA, caused the whole Jenga towel to start shaking, and then they got Oregon and Washington cheap. They basically got 4 schools for the price of 3 if you're the Big Ten, if you're Fox. And, you know, and Fox buys all the rights and then sublets them out, right, to NBC and others, right? However it worked, the Big Ten basically, that's how it worked. They got down to that. So once ESPN was out, there was nowhere for the Pac-12 to go. So huge mistake among a million smaller mistakes and all of that. I know fans are like, well, look, what's the difference? 6-6, 5-5. Like the issue would be, is it fair for a second non-power conference team to get in? You know, do we really care? And in the grand scheme of things, you don't. It doesn't really matter. It matters a ton for this sport, though, and here's why. And this is why 10, 12 years ago, I was screaming they should create a playoff with automatic bids, because it's the only way to keep a conference afloat at all. And since then, 2 of the leagues that oppose that, the Big East and the Pac-12, are now pretty much, one's dead and one's in hospice. They're the only way this sport remains nationally competitive is if you have a path to the playoff for these other leagues, including the Big 12, the ACC, everybody else. The Big 10 and SEC, if they can control it all, that's how they lift their lower levels of the sport recruiting wise. There's too many good players out there for only two leagues.
Right.
The NFL can officially determine whether you're an NFL player or not an NFL player because you either make the cut or you don't. You don't get to go to the CFL or the XFL and then play against the NFL. And then, right, so you don't get, you know, whatever. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers don't get to play the Minnesota Vikings. And you go, wow, the Blue Bombers got a better quarterback. But in college football, unless they're going to go to this straight up 40 teams, but we're going to get to your thing, Pat, 40 teams playing each other, which won't work because you can't have 1-11 teams and no one's going to want that. There's too many good players. And there's too many good players that are going to want to say, I'd rather go to Texas Tech than Indiana. I'd rather go to whatever, any team, Oklahoma State rather than Mississippi State. I want to play for this team. And they'll have enough players where some of these teams are good enough to win. And they have to have a path. As long as they have a path and get in a playoff, you can build your program up. You can get good players. The transfer portal will spread the talent out. Guys will get frustrated at these major conferences and move. And it's the last gasp. They have to get these automatic bids cemented long term. It's five. It's six. They better not screw this up. They've screwed it up to the point where the sport is not recognizable the way it was 10 years ago. And if they don't get this done, and these commissioners have failed over and over and over and over to get this done, then the sport, it will be a death knell to what was anything you thought of a national sport. And if you want to preserve the importance of the regular season, going to 12 at-large bids is the exact opposite of that. We've listened to decades of we must preserve the regular season. If all of a sudden the fifth place team in the Big Ten is getting in,
yeah, then
over the champion done. Of the Big 12, there is no right. regular season left. You can lose four games and make the playoff. This is it. This is the last stand of greediness. Because you could just box them out and say, look, they didn't, you know, they do it in the NCAA basketball tournament. This is, you know, oh, we went 8-8 in Big Ten play, but, you know, and this, you know, Murray State's a 26-3, you know, sure, you got Ja Morant, but you better win your conference tournament or you're not, you're right. If you don't have that, they'd be like, yeah, Ja Morant, who's he? If he was any good, he would have been in our league. It's like, nah, he's like what makes the sport. So they have to get this cemented. And I hope. We have heard, certainly from Sankey, that it's about creating a better overall product for college football. And hopefully, dear leader is true to his word and understands that. Because we just absolutely have to have those automatic bids. Or this is going to get really, really tough.
Yeah, and I think he wants to keep them. You guys remember the SEC's proposal actually last fall. Mark Keenum, the Mississippi State president, who's the chair of the CFP board of presidents, he proposed the best 12 last fall, and it was just didn't get enough support, and it needs unanimity. Any change would need unanimity for 24 and 25. The new contract starts in 2026 that isn't yet really agreed to. But for 24 and 25, the next 2 years, it needs a unanimous decision, 11-0, the 10 presidents, each from a different FBS league, and then Notre Dame's president. So to get unanimity, I don't think, you know, eliminating the automatic qualifier is ever going to pass, right? Because the group of fives would stand in the way. I think a lot of people's fear was the SEC and Big Ten would push it enough and maybe have some threats enough in 2026 and beyond to get their way all at larges. But I think you nailed it with the Greg Sankey's take. I think he's for automatic qualifiers. Yep. I think he's for a national championship from coast to coast. He's said that before. And I think he truly does feel bad for the Pac-12, and he doesn't like what happened to it. I think he believes it's bad for the sport. And he does. He said it multiple times, and I don't think it's just lip service. I think he wants a coast-to-coast, you know, national championship. And I think that's why a lot of Group of Five commissioners who I talked to that left that room yesterday were pleased at the, so to speak, alignment of the 5+7 and keeping the AQs.
Yeah, just quick. I mean, Pat, I don't know if you had something, but, you know, it's not Sankey, Jack Swarbrick, you know, they, Bowlesby, all these guys, they proposed for a long term, and it was the alliance that screwed it up.
Mm.
Yep.
It was the ACC and Pac-12 said, no, 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 no. How's that treating you, Pac-12?
Yeah.
You could have had 6-6.
I mean, and, truly one of the most gruesome miscalculations of all time.
I went on here and screamed about it then, and then I got calls from their leagues. Same thing with the Big East. Remember Mike Trangisi? No, 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 we don't need that. There is no Big East anymore. Like, you got to see this. So you have to have that path. You have to be about on a recruiting trail and say, look, man, we win this league, we're in the playoff, and we're winning. There's too many good players for just 25 good teams. Doesn't work that way because they can't cut. Like, this is – everybody's got a shot. There's 133 teams or whatever they were at. Now, 134? Jacksonville State's
133.
So, go ahead, Pat.
No, that's – I mean, you're right. And I think to Ross's point, too, Sankey walks a fine line in these things. You can listen to him and say that dude absolutely does care about what is best for college sports. And I think he does. But there's also the fact that business is business, and he's going to take care of SEC business. And they started the latest round of realignment chaos when they took Texas and Oklahoma. Yeah, somebody was going to take them. I don't blame him for taking them, but you can't necessarily do that and then step back and say, you know, these other people that are rating these conferences, that's not good. When we rate them, it's okay, but when they do it, it's not. So there's a little bit of a fine line to walk there. And I think it is demonstrably, obviously, has turned out demonstrably worse for the Pac-12 than the rating turned out for the Big 12. But what it did was set in motion everything that's happened here.
The alliance is going to go down in college sports history as one of the most colossal failures and impediments to college football. I think we'd probably this year have a 12-team playoff. They probably delayed it by at least a year. So imagine this year that we would have a 12-team playoff. I think somebody mentioned to me not too long ago, given – you know, you guys remember the three alliance commissioners on that Zoom call. There's that famous Zoom call that they had, kind of a press conference introducing the alliance, George Kolivkov, Kevin Warren, and Jim Phillips, about how, you know, it was a gentleman's agreement. They didn't need anything in writing. Ugh. And the sole point of the agreement was to prevent the Big Ten from taking teams. And I know that George Kolivkov probably feels like he aligned with the wrong person.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, they got, you know, they got all mad at Sankey, and that was it. But I don't know. We'll see where this is headed, but they better get that problem solved to move forward. All right, want to talk about the state of Nebraska. I think the state of Nebraska listens to this podcast.
Been a hell of a week in the state. Holy moly.
The Goodyear blimp listens, or at least they tweet to us. So why not the state? We're influencers, right? We are influencers.
We are.
Modern influencers. We had quite a week in Nebraska. So we'll start. We have three major items. Let's start with there's the good, the bad, and the ugly. Of Nebraska, but I think they're listening to us talk about Iowa all the time. And I mean, it's when you live in Nebraska, you like, you understand that, like, okay, much of the focus of the country is going to be on like New York City or something like that, right? But when Iowa's getting all the shine, I think that just fires up these Nebraska. I mean, come on, we can compete with Iowa when it comes to news. So start with this. It's not college football, but it's college sports, and it was cool. 92,000 people came out to Lincoln on Wednesday night to watch a volleyball game, and we have talked a number of times on here that we think, at least I think, it's the sport in college sports that has the most growth potential, because watching really good volleyball is fun. It's a fun sport to watch. Mm-hmm. They have a little bit of a TV problem because a match can take like an hour or like 2 hours. Like you don't know, it's going five sets to three, but pretty astounding. 92,000 for a women's volleyball match or volleyball match of any kind set the women's attendance record. Pat, what do you think?
Yeah. So I have a couple of thoughts on this. I mean, for one, just the unbelievable level of fandom in that state. And I know they do all listen to us. So we're not just sucking up to you from Chadron to Omaha. We know they're listening, but you know, this, they fill their arena for volleyball regularly. So, you know, they do it game in, game out, match in, match out, I should say. And obviously what they do for football is incredible. And then to bring in 92,000 people for a volleyball match on a Wednesday, like, look, you can't all just be people from Omaha and Lincoln. You've got to be bringing people in driving from all over the place like you do for football games on a Wednesday to just basically drop everything, say, hey, let's load up the truck. We're going to a volleyball match in the football stadium. Incredible scene. And it is. It is a great sport, and Nebraska is among the very elite programs in it. My one issue is not with Nebraska. It's with the media coverage of the event, so to speak.
Okay.
Who did Nebraska play and who won and what was the score?
They played Omaha and they swept them. But it took me a long time to find that out.
It took me a long time to find that out, too, because everybody that was going on and on about this said nothing about the actual competition. And this is my ongoing issue with coverage and or treatment of women's sports. People that want to bring attention to how great women's sports are, awesome. I am in favor of that as well. First-hand experience, I know. But it all just becomes a statement, and it becomes not about the actual competition. And that's where it's still condescending, and it's still leaving women's sports a little bit behind men's sports. Because men's sports, it's all about who won and what happened. And if it's just, oh, look, there's a big crowd, and they don't even say who played, who won. If that's not even part of the coverage here, then all you're doing is making a statement. You're not necessarily advancing this to a point where you're on even footing with men's sports, where it's about this team is good, that team is not good. We're going to say really good things about this team that's good. We're going to be critical of that team that's not good. You start doing that, and then we're looking at women's sports the way we look at men's sports.
Wow. Well, you know, it took me a while too to figure out who they were playing. I figured it was like a lower level team, right? That they could be.
I thought they'd bring in like number two. That's who they should have brought in.
That's who they should. That would be
Or whoever, of course, 92,000. I don't even know if they're number one.
Well, 92,000. Yeah, like who's really good? Like Tennessee, Florida,
Kentucky, right?
You know, yeah, like those are some good volleyball. Like, that would be that would be pretty cool. But. Yeah, it took me a while to figure out that as well. But it was amazing. Like their fan base. I visited Nebraska for the first time last fall, and it's wild. I mean, the only comparison, right, is some spots in the SEC as far as the fan base and the passion and the way they approach the competition and the school, and it's crazy. I was blown away, and then to see that 92,000 for a volleyball match is insane. And I know I think they've got like a sellout streak at their own arena. I mean, they're a powerhouse in volleyball and have been for years. But it was really cool. And it made me think of what other, you know, Olympic type sports could we see in a football stadium that could get a sold out stadium. I was asking somebody actually in the SEC footprint that, and they immediately said gymnastics, like Georgia, Alabama gymnastics, LSU gymnastics could maybe you could get enough. outdoor? Maybe not 92,000. Yeah, it would be. Yeah, right. You'd have to.
You know how hard it is.
You'd really have to have a good weather day, like you know, 80 degrees, no wind.
No, you got to be in a dome. I mean, trying the triple sow cow there and got blown off line.
The Mother Nature did smile on Nebraska with that weather, by the way, because that could have been way worse, and it was perfect.
I think they just handed out a free runs of pie for everyone who showed up, and like 100. I mean, they say free pie, come by. No, I don't know, Pat. The volleyball is really exciting, but I remember they started this with hockey, and Michigan State and Michigan held an outdoor game at Spartan Stadium. And it set off a wave of this. And this is what I'm expecting will happen now. And they called it the Cold War. And they played an outdoor hockey game. And it was like they had done this once in like Moscow. Who was the AD up at Michigan State who would play pretty much?
Mark Hollis.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Mark, for forgetting your name for briefly. But Mark Hollis would stay. Yeah, he was the aircraft carrier guy for basketball. He wanted to play games anywhere but where they were supposed to be played. But it was a big thing. And I actually covered that game and it sparked this big movement. I don't recall anybody being that excited who won. I do think they should have played somebody good and hyped up that, hey, these are the top two or top five teams in the country. Try to build. Cause I don't think Omaha is a great program or whatever. Nebraska obviously is unique. It's one of the things about volleyball is very small towns and high schools can play it and play it pretty well. Cause you don't need that many kids. Mm. And so, you know, if you only need six. If you got six, you can play a team. Well, most schools are going to have six. So volleyball is very good for small schools, which obviously populate Nebraska. It's all exciting. So, they could have done a better job with that, the media certainly. But that said, it was more the spectacle. I think this will set off a wave. That's what happened with the hockey. The NHL got into it, right? Now they play multiple stadium games a year, and every New Year's Day they play an outdoor game, which is a huge selling point. They've played them all over. So my thing is, like, when does LSU say we're going to put women's basketball in Death Valley and break this record? Once you throw a record up there for a woman's sporting, 92,003, everyone. And when does Michigan say, forget it? They call state up and say, we're playing basketball. We'll play a soccer game. Whatever we got to play, we're setting the record. Because there's nothing college's fan bases like more than being like, we're going to break. Yeah, right.
That's right.
You could be like, hey, we're going to have a gin rummy tournament, but we're going to set the world record. All right, we're there, man. We're not letting Tennessee beat us. So, but I'm fine with that. Hey, bring on these big events if these schools want to do it. I'm sure they made a nice penny. Selling that's an extra football game.
It was scrap. $25 a ticket. I mean, it wasn't like they were letting people in for a nickel.
Yeah.
You know, no. I mean, so that's a hell of a nice
concessions,
revenue.
Concessions, parking, and priority
the
seating.
Lack of probably expense. I mean, compared to a football game, the expense of running that probably is a little lower. I'm guessing they made a home SEC football game turns a profit of $2 to $3 million. So I'm guessing they made somewhere.
I think higher, don't they?
In the ballpark of that. With profit. The profit.
Oh, profit.
You know, like revenue. Okay. Yeah, they would make more, but of course,
and
profit.
They
fund
their sports. Yeah. So.
Also, Dan, women's basketball or a basketball game in Tiger Stadium. I'm just imagining the humidity layer on the hardwood floor.
Yeah,
the season doesn't start till November.
Yeah, still, the humidity level on the hardwood floor.
I'm not sure Baton Rouge is the place for it. Yeah, okay, they got the team and they got the fans, but
they have the coach, too. I mean, they could, could see them that if they can get the weather right in the court and all that, because that would be like the top concern would be the layer of just the humidity in the air. But they would come. I mean, like, they got everything, right? They got the coach, they got the championship, the team, all these great. That's a great one, actually. Outside of the weather, that would probably do it. That would probably.
How humid is it in November?
I mean, dude, it's humid pretty much all year round. humid in January. I mean, it's over 50%.
Every AD in the country is having a meeting today, going, "How do we do one of these?"
Yeah.
Yeah, let's. Yeah. And they should. It's right. Great. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's fun. Cool. It's creative and get people involved and excited. And yes, Dan, as you said, like, challenge a fan base to show what great fans you are. Oh, they love that stuff. They show up for that.
We talked about gymnastics, but the other one suggested to me by SEC official was soccer, like having one of their best women's soccer teams, like in the football stadium.
Yeah. I mean that, and you challenge them. I don't think there's that many, generally speaking, nobody who goes to watch women's soccer. Like they don't have there are fans at every basketball game, you know.
Yeah.
You have South Carolina play LSU in a college basketball game, it's going to sell out their stadium or come pretty close, you know, or UConn comes to town or something like that. There are fans. There aren't really that for soccer. But if you challenge them that way, I mean, at the end of the day, they're all going to mess around, and then Michigan's going to come in and say, all right, well, we're going to beat you. Yeah, we're going to beat you one way or another. And so, hey, go for it. We like creative things and fun things. The not so good. I believe at one point I said Eric Gilbert. I think he was at LSU at the time, was going to win like the Heisman. I don't know. I was a huge Eric Gilbert fan. He is incredible talent. Was at LSU. Then he was at Georgia. And he was looking to get eligible at Nebraska. The other night he broke in and tried to rip off a liquor store and vape shop in Lincoln. This is probably going to end his career. The video is just astounding of this arrest. Sad story of a guy who physically had all the tools, but clearly he's got all sorts of issues.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough. I mean, this is a guy, yes, he was like, I think the number two recruit in the country when he was coming out, 6'7", 250, 260, and could run as LSU, and it bombed out there, and then he went to Georgia, didn't last very long at Georgia. Now he's at Nebraska, and he's clearly blowing that chance as well. And, you know, you hate to see these kind of things. And, you know, whether it's a mental health issue, whether it's, you know, other things, profound lack of guidance, whatever, but he's throwing away the chance of a lifetime here.
Yeah, it's super sad. I was looking at his number 10th best player in the country, number one tight end. A five-star, 6'5", 250 is what he came out of high school at in Marietta, Georgia. He was, really hyped up when he came to LSU. I remember him joining the team in 2020. And I immediately, I remember hearing from folks there in Baton Rouge that things weren't going to work out. And I think Pat mentioned it there, you know, lack of maybe home support, maybe some mental challenges situation at home. It sounds like there's not a lot of guidance for him, and it's really unfortunate to see what happened, and it's just really sad to see the video because he had an incredible amount of talent, and like a lot of kids who come maybe from a place like he did, I'm sure he wanted or wants to, you know, kind of bring his family to another level with football. And obviously it doesn't seem like it's going to happen.
Yeah. And I mean, he's clearly got all sorts of issues because he was, first off, he put a mask on to try to hide his identity. There ain't a whole lot of guys looking like him walking around Lincoln, Nebraska. Yeah, it's pretty easy to figure out. If you're the detective, your first call, had they not caught him in the act, first call might have been to the football team. Say, you got any guys about 6'7", 250 walking around over there? Because there ain't a whole lot just on the streets. Two, he didn't steal money. He stole vape products, cigars, lighters, and like kind of a cannabis type thing that somehow they slipped through. Guys, there's no way Nebraska's legalizing cannabis, I don't think. I mean, you know, break and entering to vape.
Yeah, it's weird.
Like really he wasn't weird. Really stealing. He was, but cigars and lighters, so there's all of that. just a terrible case. All right, and then in this one, and we're going to get to our picks. I know it's a little odd if you came in just for picks. I don't know why you would, though. It's most of our readers sent us this.
Yeah.
Also, crime.
This is what people wanted us to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, really, everyone. Also, crime and punishment, sort of. I'll set it up, and then do we have this news account, Sean? Usually do.
We do.
Okay, yeah. Sean, I don't know why I asked Sean. He always does. Norfolk, Nebraska. Maybe these guys, man and beast, were driving to the volleyball game. I don't know. But they were driving, and around 10 a.m., Norfolk Police Division responded to a call of a man driving eastbound on 275 with a Watusi bull in the passenger seat of his car. He had a bull. The officers received a call. This is from Police Captain Chad Ryman. The officers received a call referencing a car driving into town that had a cow in it. They thought it was going to be a calf or something small. And it turned out to be something that would fit inside the vehicle, end quote, turned out to be a bull. The video of this is astounding. The guy cut his car in half. He took a sawzall to this. I don't even know how you do this. Half his car. The driver's side has a windshield and, like, looks regular. The passenger side, riding shotgun, is a bull. He's too big to fit in the car, so he kind of made it like a half convertible and then put, like, a pen in there. Like, why don't you have a truck? It's so many questions. And the bull is riding quite, looks happy, like a dog when they get a car ride.
Yeah, you know, right?
He's like, holy, look at this. I don't even have to move, and I'm going back. The bull must have been absolutely confused. And he was driving down the highway. Play this news account, please.
Norfolk Police Division responded to a call of a man driving eastbound on 275 with a Watusi bull in his passenger seat.
The officers received a call reference a car driving into town that had a cow in it. They thought that it was going to be, you know, like a calf, something smaller, something that actually fit inside the vehicle.
And the vehicle was big enough. Well, technically.
As a result, the officer performed a traffic stop and addressed some traffic violations that were occurring with that.
Some traffic violations.
Yeah. Watusi bulls, by the way, average for a male is about 1,200 pounds.
Well, guys looked above average.
Yeah. I mean, this is a beast. Absolute beast. And the horns are incredible. Looks like a woolly mammoth. I mean, like these giant curving horns.
Yeah.
Or tusks or whatever they are.
I'll just say this. Nebraska's playing Minnesota Thursday night. Nebraska by 100. The Cornhusker fans are acting up and acting out. They're going to volleyball games. They're driving bulls around in little cars. They're stealing.
New mascot. Bring this bull into the stadium.
The bull needs to get. Yeah. We got to embrace this bull somehow. You got Ralphie. Yeah. We got this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. What? Matt Rhule needs to embrace the bull.
My favorite part is what the cops gave him a warning. They didn't give him a ticket. They just said, leave the city. I don't blame the officer on duty. What am I going to do?
Bring your bull somewhere else.
Yeah. What am I going to do with this? If I arrest the guy, then I got to handle this bull.
The bull, yeah.
If I just leave and don't come back, I don't know what you do out in county. But why was the guy driving through a city?
I-275, I mean, you know, like, not a small road there. It's unbelievable. And did you see what the bull did to the back windshield of the car, the back window?
No, I did not.
Oh, yeah. Like the bull had relieved itself. At high volume. High volume.
Oh, imagine driving behind that.
Yeah.
What the hell is that I'm coming up on? Oh.
I know. Could you imagine the reaction of people passing this truck, especially from the front, where you see these massive horns. Each horn looked about 5 feet, or 5 feet in length. It was insane.
Matt Rhule has reestablished the pride in this program. Right. The bull. Literal BS.
That mess is not, with the Nebraska Bull, you get the horns.
Pat, that is not I-275. That's just like County Road 275.
Okay, all right.
There's no interstate going through Norfolk.
Yeah.
Got to make sure that everyone can get to Norfolk. Norfolk, Nebraska. Anyway, I don't know what you lunatics are doing out there, but you clearly have too much time on your hands. It's a good thing Big Red starting its season. But
they play, you know, you mentioned Ralphie. They play Colorado next week. Let's bring Ralphie and the Wattusi Bull together.
Right. Oh, his name's Howdy Doody, by the way.
Howdy.
Of course. Bring Howdy Doody. Get him there. This is the most famous bull in Nebraska right now.
Ralphie versus Howdy Doody. Showdown for the ages.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know. I just think that they just got upset that Iowa's getting all the attention, and here we are, man. Here we are. All right. One final thing before we get to the picks. We've talked about some spicy games this weekend. Miami, Ohio chirping that they're the real Miami against Miami, Florida. The Miami Throwdown. They call it the Confusion Bowl. Been dubbed the Confusion Bowl. They've played three times previously. And the Florida Miami has won all three. But love that random trash talk. Then we have this one. South Alabama is playing Tulane this weekend. And
I know where this is going.
On the back of the South Alabama helmet. Now, South Alabama is located in Biloxi, right? No, I'm not Biloxi.
Mobile.
In Mississippi.
No, Mobile.
I'm
Mobile.
Sorry. Down the road. Mobile. It's not Biloxi's not even in Alabama, which would generally, even in conference realignment. Yeah, this is
my hometown, by the way. Biloxi, my hometown. Look at you butchering the hell out of it.
Even in conference realignment, generally, South Alabama is located in Alabama, okay? Right. I like when they call it Lower Alabama. They just call it L.A.
That's right, L.A. Mm-hmm.
One time I was there. They're going, I'm going to L.A. this afternoon, and it's like...
It's okay. Right. The Weather Channel, as you recall, during Katrina, called the coast of Mississippi... the landmass between Mobile and New Orleans. That was nice. The landmass.
Landmass. That's all you are. All right. Well, Mobile has a, they take Mardi Gras very seriously. They have a big Mardi Gras there. It's kind of an underrated, fun little town. Underrated because it's not rated at all. I don't think anyone ever talked about it. But no, it's a fun little town. They got that one tall building I always thought was funny. Somebody ambitiously built like a 50-story building and everything else is four stories. Mm-hmm. But hey, you know, go for it. It's a nice-looking building. Anyway, they put on the back of their helmet, South Alabama put Home of Mardi Gras on the back of their helmet. And they are playing Tulane, which is located in New Orleans, which has a little Mardi Gras of their own. Pat 40, what kind of fighting words is this?
Well, I will ultimately defer to Ross on this since he lived in the battleground between New Orleans
the landmass.
Yeah, the landmass.
All right. Right. Ross, right. What is going on? Right. We're fighting over Mardi Gras?
Yeah, this is a long-running thing between New Orleans and Mobile. Mobile has historic documents that say that they... First, they're the first ones that had a Mardi Gras parade, I don't know, over 100 years ago. And in New Orleans, just basically copied off of them and then made it bigger and better. So this is like a long running thing. And it is very sensitive topic to people in both cities, for sure. And this is a great way to piss off everybody at Tulane, for sure.
Yeah,
that was the goal achieved.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, you are going at the king there. If you're going on and say, yeah, no, our Mardi Gras is better. But Mobile is fun. I mean, like you go there for the Senior Bowl and you're like, oh, wow, I can kind of dig this. Or you go cover that. Do they still have the bad bowl game there? It's been just called like eight different things, the Gallery Furniture Bowl.
GoDaddy.
Yeah, I covered one of them.
Yeah. Pat, who's got the real, who is the home of Mardi Gras?
I've actually never been to either Mardi Gras, but look, New Orleans, you want to throw a big ass organized party or disorganized party, New Orleans wins, beats all comers, so New Orleans.
Yeah, it's tough. Is it history or is it the innovators, right?
Mm-hmm.
right? It's like those guys that the McDonald's brothers, right? But then the Roy Kroc made it. Ray Kroc, yeah, whatever. Yeah, I don't know. This is, I mean, this is going to be, are they going to drink after? Like, they got to incorporate more into this.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean,
so as we were talking, just did some Googling to remember exactly the story.
Is this what they teach in like fifth grade in the land mass between these
fifth grade civics and Biloxi?
In 17, this is from the site Mardi Gras History, and actually it's MardiGrasNewOrleans.com. So that's interesting because it does credit Mobile with the first Mardi Gras. It says in 1703, the tiny settlement of Fort Louis de la Mobile celebrated America's first Mardi Gras. In 1704, Mobile established a secret society, Masque de la Mobile, similar to those to form a current Mardi Gras cruise in New Orleans. So there you go. But the New Orleans people, believe me, and all of South Louisiana will vehemently disagree.
Mm. And you're not taking a side, I've noticed. I'm noticing you're not.
Yeah.
You don't want to get shot in either direction.
Again, we're right in the middle, right? I grew up in Biloxi. It's an hour from New Orleans. It's 45, 50 minutes from Mobile. We had our own Mardi Gras.
How was it?
And it's fine. Before Katrina, we had three parades on Mardi Gras Day. And there's two big Mardi Gras organizations that actually I'm a part of. So I go to Mardi Gras balls down there every year. And my family has been royalty in Mardi Gras, in Biloxi Mardi Gras. So we do our own thing. But I think most of the people in Biloxi, most of the people in the Mississippi coast who do Mardi Gras do credit, you know, New Orleans, do look to New Orleans for Mardi Gras.
Well, we're going to settle this on the field. We're going to settle this on the field. So yeah. I love it. I love it. Way to walk right in on this. Good job, South Alabama. All right. Race for the case. Let's do this. Games. Lines are provided by BetMGM. Gambling needs BetMGM. This one it may have already been played by the time you hear this. Who knows? It's a Thursday night opener. There's a couple good games Thursday night. We won't weigh on too much, you know, because many of you will listen to this on Friday, but we'll make this pick because it is a big game. Florida Gators. This is like the first non-conference game out of Florida in, I don't know, generations. They're at Utah. Utes are ranked 14th. Utah is giving 4.5. Games at 8 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. If it is before 8 o'clock Eastern, or if not, tune in now, or I don't know, whatever. Check Yahoo Sports and you can get the scores. Pat, what do you got?
Well, yeah, indicative of where this is going. That line started at 6.5. It's now 4.5. You say, give me Florida. Cam Rising not expected to play, the heart and soul of the Utah team. On top of that, tight end Brent Quithy, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm not sure whether he's going to play or not. I don't think the Gators are great, and I think it's going to be a lot like last year. They're going to beat Utah, and people are going to think really great things about Florida and be doubting Utah, and the opposite's probably going to be true in the long haul, that Utah may end up having a better season. But I am taking the Gators to cover for sure and perhaps win outright.
Same, yeah, without Cam Rising, and I actually think, you know, the Gators are going to be, I think they opened the season at like 5.5 win total on the year, which I thought was kind of crazy. So I think they're going to be much better this year. So give me the Gators to cover the 4.5 and then outright win. I actually think they'll outright win the game. Now, the only thing I have issues with in picking this is that they're going across the country and it's going to be a long trip and all that stuff. They actually stayed here in Dallas on Tuesday night because of the hurricane. They left a day early and then they went to Utah yesterday, flew to Utah yesterday. So there's a lot of travel. There's a lot of issues there logistically. And as Dan said, and I don't remember the exact dates, but it is like the first game outside of Florida against like a Power 5 team in decades. In the last time they won, I think the stat is the last time Florida won a game outside of the state to begin the season, like a non-conference game, was like in the 50s or 40s. So this will certainly, you know, be a little different. But well, give me the Gators to defy all of it.
last non-con game out of state of Florida for the Gators was 1991. They played Syracuse, lost 38-21. Mm. So, Sean, pick.
Yeah, last year Ross swept us on this game. He took Florida, we all took Utah, and I think it was like one of the first three sentences I had on the show. So I mean, Utah has just been in my doghouse forever. I might step in it again. I'm gonna go with Utah. I can't get swept. Whoa! I can't get swept on this.
Wow. I'm going. I'm going to go the Gators too. If I got a team given, the altitude's the real issue. These kids were born in 2005, 2003. They don't care about what happened in 91. But the altitude's my one concern. But I'll take the Gators. I think Utah's playing third string quarterback. So we'll see. Maybe you already know that one. All right, Colorado. Coach Prime heads to TCU. TCU 17th. TCU is giving 20.5. Game is the big noon on Fox. Kind of interesting. And the hype into this, it is all Coach Prime, Coach Prime, Coach Prime, not the program that actually played in the national championship game as the reigning runner-up, if you will. Not a lot of hype on TCU. It's hard to get bulletin board material when you are the team that went to the national championship game and you're playing a 1-11 squad. And everyone's talking about the 1-11 squad, but that is the Prime effect. So Ross, who you got?
Yeah, you know, we talked about this game in Dion in Colorado earlier this week. In one of the things I said was they're an enigma in Colorado. I mean, they have 50 new players. I don't know what to expect from them, but this just seems like a really high number, 20.5. You know, TCU lost, its two best offensive players from last year's team. So I firmly expect TCU to win the game. I don't think they're going to win by 3 touchdowns. So give me Prime to cover the 20.5.
This is the ultimate dartboard game. We're throwing it out there because nobody knows what Colorado's going to look like. I have a decent idea that TCU is going to still be pretty good. Chandler Morris, the quarterback, actually started last year before he got hurt. Max Duggan all of a sudden became a Heisman finalist. They don't have the top end talent like they did last year, and like Quentin Johnston, Kendre Miller, some of those guys, but they're good. They have a good complete roster. And yes, they are reveling, I think, in the disrespect of like, that was a flash in the pan. TCU's not doing that again. And they may not do that again, but they're still going to be good. I think TCU wins and covers in a absolute baking oven of Amon Carter Stadium at 11 a.m. kickoff on Saturday.
It's supposed to be 100 degrees, I think, right around 100 degrees, you know, by like halftime.
Not easily replicated in Boulder. Sorry. Mm-mm.
Last year, TCU beat Colorado by a margin of 25. I think Dion gets them under that 25 mark. I mean, that Colorado team last year, week one, I think significantly worse than what they're rolling out in week one this year. So I'm going to take Colorado to cover this game.
I'm concerned about Colorado's size on the lines, and I think this is going to be a wear down game. Again, the heat, I think TCU, Sonny Dykes are going to run the ball right at him. I will take TCU giving that many points. But man, if you're betting real money on this thing, good for you. You got some courage. I don't know. Battle of Carolina, number 21, North Carolina is playing South Carolina. That game is in Charlotte. Is that right?
Yep.
Or is it at South? It's in Charlotte, right?
No, it's in Charlotte.
Yeah. Neutral site, North Carolina. Given 2.5 Saturday, 7:30 on ABC. Ross, or you picked first last time. Pat. I'll just name everyone on the show. Pat.
You know what? All right, we got the battle who's the real Miami. We have the battle for who's the real Carolina here.
Yep.
In this battle, I am going south over north for a couple reasons. One, I mean, look, Drake May's awesome and everything, but is the defense any better or not? Because that defense was not good for North Carolina. Gave up 6.14 yards per play last year, 115th in the nation. Spencer Rattler and some good weapons and some intriguing new pieces there. And Shane Beamer, hey, he's big game Shane, right? He beat North Carolina bowl game his first year. That was a big win as an underdog. And then last year, back-to-back upsets of Tennessee and Clemson. Gets his teams up for the big ones. This is a big one in that area of the woods, and I'm going to go with the Gamecocks.
Man, this is a tough one. I feel like you just close my eyes and flip a coin kind of thing. I spent some time in Chapel Hill in the spring, and you know they returned virtually everybody. But I don't know if that's a good thing defensively, because they were really bad last year and have in the last couple years. So, but I'm still gonna say that they eke out one by maybe a field goal, North Carolina, and cover this.
Sean.
Yeah, South Carolina felt like slow starters last year. They started 1-2, and they had a couple weird losses. I mean, that Tennessee win was fantastic where they ran out of fireworks, but they got beat pretty bad by Florida and lost by 13 to Missouri. So they're not impervious to an odd loss. I'm taking UNC to cover this game. I think they just have a better quarterback.
I'm taking South Carolina. I think the program's really moving, and we will see. Big opportunity for them, but I think they're getting better in the just trenches, talent level. Spencer Rattler should be better, all of that. But I cannot let this go past without the fact that these are the Cock Commanders. They're getting points, yes. And they're playing this thing in Charlotte, which is the metropolitan area closest to the famed Cluck Norris. You remember Cluck Norris?
Correct. Absolutely.
How could I forget?
The angry rooster who was sent to a pet shelter, an animal shelter, and it was so angry that it terrorized all of the other animals. It tried to fight every animal at the animal shelter, and the staff was so traumatized by trying to deal with what they named Cluck Norris that they literally got rid of him. And somebody eventually... he had to be kept in a single cell housing. He went to the SHU, special housing unit, the hole. Andy Dufresne in the pit, Cluck Norris. He's out. He was adopted. And I'm going to tell you what, Shane Beamer, I'm picking you to win. But if you don't get Cluck Norris to this game, I'm going to be so disappointed in you. This is it. I'm all about the animals this year. I want the bull. I want that bull in Nebraska. I want Cluck Norris. I want them drinking hurricanes down there and wherever they're playing this Mardi Gras game. Let's go. Cluck. Win it for Cluck.
Cluck Norris is the Cock Commander.
He is the Cock Commander.
Soy el Cock Commander.
He is the Cock Commander. All right. Finally, the big one before we make our locks of the week. LSU 5. FSU 8, games at Orlando Sunday night. Huge one. National playoff implications right off the bat. LSU Tigers giving 2.5, games at 7:30 on ABC. Ross.
This is another one. It just feels like a coin flip to me. Last year we saw these two teams go at it, and Florida State jumped out to like a 2-3 touchdown lead, controlled the entire game, and then late in the game, Jaden Daniels turned it on, quarterback from LSU, and they became within a missed field goal of tying the game in a wild one. I think it's going to be somewhat similar. I mean, I expect a really close game. You know, Brian Kelly and Florida State, they have had incredible close games. They went to overtime a couple years ago when he was at Notre Dame. Yeah, I remember the 2013 game, the year Florida State won the national championship. Notre Dame got called for offensive PI that prevented them from potentially winning that game late. There have been some great battles, and this is going to be another one, I think. I think it's going to be really tight. And again, I'm going to go with LSU to eke it out despite missing potentially their best defensive player in Mason Smith. But I think Jaden Daniels gives them just that extra little edge, and they win the game and cover the 2.5.
I agree. It's a coin flip. Last year's game went absolutely crazy. I hope this is one similar. Ross and I think we'll both be there covering that. Looking forward to it. I'm going to take the Noles, though. you know, I'm bullish on their team. I think they've put together the pieces to be extremely good this year. Not that LSU is not, but I do think you take a Mason Smith out in a coin flip game, then that coin may end up the other way. Jordan Travis is a very good seasoned quarterback, had a great year last year for them. Johnny Wilson, deep threat. Jared Verse going to be in the backfield going after Jaden Daniels. A lot of transfer portal additions. I like what Florida State's putting on the field this year, so I'm going to take the Noles in that game and in a lot of games this year.
I think there's been a lot of press clippings this offseason about this game. It's the biggest game of week one, and then both these teams are very exciting. It's been the game that everyone's looking forward to, and I think Brian Kelly is going to be able to handle that a little bit better. It's gonna be close. I think, what does Dan call it? The fentanyl pick of the week, where you just want to stay away from it. But I think I have to take LSU here.
I am picking LSU to make the playoff. I'm picking Jaden Daniels to win the Heisman, and it starts here. Tigers cover and win. I got it. I'm all in. I'm all in on LSU. I can't back down now. All right. Locks of the week, which are often unlocked, but we're going to try. Locks of the week. Pat?
Okay. And boy, yeah, we're all throwing stuff at the wall here at first week. But I am going to take Old Dominion to cover 15.5 against Virginia Tech, because I think Virginia Tech is probably still lousy. They were really bad last year, and Old Dominion beat them. I'm not sure Old Dominion is going to be great either, but they do have the leading tackler, returning tackler in the United States. But anyway, 15.5, you get me on that side of the 14 number, I'll take the Monarchs to cover in the Battle of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
All right. Ross?
Rice plays at Texas on Saturday. It's a 35.5 point spread for the Longhorns. Gimme Texas and Quinn Ewers to cover that 35.5. This feels like a blowout 55-7 type of game. It's going to be super hot. And I think Texas this year, they were my Big 12 championship pick, which hasn't really worked out in the past. But give me them as the lock of the week to cover the 35.5 against Rice.
John? I'm gonna go with a little Big Ten versus MAC action here.
Oh. That's my pick.
I'm going Illinois, giving 9.5 to Toledo. Toledo's a good program in the MAC. I think they're expected to win it. But Illinois, I expect them to come out, not miss a beat from last year. They bring in Luke Altmaier from Ole Miss. And then Toledo's not going to be able to handle both Jerzon Newton and Keith Randolph Jr. on the inside. So I don't think a lot of points are going to be scored on Toledo's side. And Illinois can at least get some scores up, cover that 9.5.
All right, well, I'm not backing down because I'm going Toledo Rockets.
No! Okay.
We will double pick this game. I would pick another game if you were picking someone else. First off, it's going to be 9.5. Daquan Finn can run. They've got four of their five starters back on offensive line. Toledo is eyeing a possible New Year's Six Bowl bid. This is an excellent MAC team. And with the new clock rules, it's going to be a low-scoring game. The clock is going to run. Bielema's not going to be throwing it all over the place. I think you give me 9.5 on a team as good as it was 10, which I liked a little better, but 9.5 on a team as good as the Rockets. I'm going at it. Sean, we're going head to head right off the bat.
Is this allowed?
Look at the excitement. I don't know. We don't have rules here.
There are no rules.
Did I get a
case? There are no rules.
I didn't get a case of beer last year. I got like three watered down drinks in LA. Like, what? I mean, come on.
Rum old fashions. Don't call them watered down.
I'm with you on that one, Dan. I say watch out for Toledo.
Plus, your track record, Sean. I mean,
poor Sean.
he throws it back. None of us are good. All right, that's it. Everyone's going to be watching now. This is going to be an exciting. This will be readdressed on our overreaction show, which will come out on Monday. So be there for that. Season's here. Everyone have fun at your tailgates. Continue to spread the word about the College Football Inquirer. And we will talk to you later.